thank you for the hospitality and welcome that both Sunita and I have enjoyed in Norwich. This is our first visit to this part of the world, and it really has been a very positive and lovely experience. So thank you to each one of you as citizens of this area who welcome strangers in their midst. Thank you. It's been a real honor for us, and for me in particular, to be asked to speak this evening when John Wright called me a few months ago. I know it was a big step of faith he was taking along with John here, and it really is lovely to see what has transpired from those days when they planned to put together this evening. In a sense, yes, I've journeyed from London, but as I reflected in preparing for this evening, you know, it was, I think, Confucius who said, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step. And as I've reflected back over the years, it has been quite a journey. My father had to flee from India when it was partitioned in 1947. Those of you who've seen the film Gandhi will have seen how millions had to flee from one part of the world and millions from another. The Hindus leaving the Muslim side, the Muslims leaving the Hindu side, and massacres happening in between. And my own family jumped on a ship, literally, and landed in Africa. And it was in East Africa. I was born in Kenya. And in Kenya, again, there were issues between communities in conflict. You know, what is so special about this evening and about events like this across the country is communities coming together. Civic leaders, you know, you are a community together, living side by side, and that is a very special, a real privilege which must never be taken for granted, because, as I say, my own experience when I reflect on my journey is communities in conflict. To think that people would massacre each other and yet for centuries live next to each other, and we've seen that within Europe and Bosnia and other places, and so it is very special what is taking place. And in Africa, again, the Asian community, the European community, the African community, again, problems. And you all have heard of the Idi Amin episode. And again, I would want to express my gratitude to local communities here, because I know that some of the Ugandan refugees landed at your doorsteps and you did welcome them. These are bits of the story that never get communicated beyond the sort of those who hear them. And yet communities, how we take it for granted. And so there we were, arrived from East Africa to London. 15 of us landed in Shepherd's Bush. And guess what we did? No prizes if you tell me. Yes, you opened a corner shop. Yes, we did. And I take great pride in saying that, because we started life in the corner shop. I was 16. There were 15 of us. 4 bedrooms, and even though my own biological father died when partition took place, my uncle, who was my earthly father, he died within weeks of arriving in Britain. He just couldn't cope with the loss. And so there were 15 of us, mainly 5 boys, 6 sisters, mum, aunt, granny, and we began life. He left us with one message. He always said when he brought us up, never, ever take something that you haven't earned. So we all worked, and we worked very hard. One shop became 2, became 3, became 6. And in a matter of months, we were running a chain store. Now, how did we do it? Well, you know, people ask me, they're intrigued, how did you all do it? Well, I'll tell you, when you arrive in a country and you're totally new to the country, well, what do you do? You don't know the local customs. I remember we got the television set in these early days, and we put it on one evening. And we saw this policeman who came on a program, and he said, hello, hello, hello. And everybody would laugh, and we couldn't understand what was going on. We said, what is all this? Why do people laugh when this happens? And yet they did. And so we said, oh, forget the television. Let's see what's happening outside. And at 9:30, you see, the shop used to shut at 6. But at 9:30, we noticed crowds of people coming out of this place called a bingo hall. Now, I'd never heard of a bingo hall before. But we said, if people are coming out of this bingo hall, this is a very interesting opportunity for us, because if he opened our shop, there's no other shop open. And guess what? They flooded our shop. And that accounts for, you know, in accounting terms, it's called asset utilization. You're sweating your assets. And anybody will tell you, you know, what that is all about. So we did well. And then we noticed also niche targets. You know, within the area we lived in, Shepherd's Bush, there was a lot of building work going on. And we noticed there was a community that didn't quite speak the way that others spoke. And as we spoke to them, we discovered they were from Ireland. And we asked them, we said to them, what do you miss most from your home? Because like us, you've left your home. And they told us, so we made a list of what they missed. Yes, we got the stuff that they missed. They paid a premium. And we got all, they did, and we got all the trade. Every Irish person in that area, neighborhood, said, go to that shop, and they will tell you what you want. And so the business prospered. But in all that journey, there was one aspect which was really important for us. I come from a Hindu family, and which is why we fled from what became Pakistan. And when we arrived in Africa, as I said, my biological father died. My uncle was a very devout Sikh, so he was very keen that I also learnt about the Sikh faith. And then the best school in the area was a Muslim school. So I had Islam, Sikhism, and Hinduism. But what he said was, and what the community always said was, no, no, this Christianity thing is not for us at all. It is alien to us. The Christianity is the white man's religion. It's a colonial god. In fact, the picture I tell you they painted in my mind was almost, I imagine, Jesus as pinstripe suit, bowler hat, City of London. To me, that was a picture that I had built of this Jesus. This Jesus that Steve Downs spoke so beautifully of. You know, Steve, I could have sat here this evening and listened to you for the rest of the evening. I just felt your story was so powerful and so real. It really struck me. But maybe another time I'm going to try and find time. Or maybe you'll write a book about it, because I'd want to read it. Fascinating. But there I was with this picture of Jesus. And so working in the corner shop, I'd made one commitment to my uncle before he died. I said, because I was the only one in the family who'd done O-levels and A-levels, and even though they sent me to the local authority, put me into the local comprehensive, which was behind the Queen's Park Rangers Stadium. So yes, I'm a supporter of Queen's Park Rangers. And there I was in that school, but I got the A-levels. And then the family said, you know, my uncle said, university, you must go. So running the corner shop, I found that the nearest university to me was 5p bus ride. It was Imperial College. And I got my place at Imperial, and I read physics and ran the corner shop at the same time. But in the third year, I had to be away from home. I had to live away from home, because that was the rule of the university. And so if you can imagine someone who's now been part of a ghetto, and I use my words advisedly, I really was. We stuck to ourselves. There was so much fear outside, the fear of being beaten up, the fear of being abused, that we kept together. And here I was, having to go to Imperial College, and I landed at the college, and I can tell you, it was miserable. It really was like the world had come to an end. There was nobody I could relate to. It's all right relating to customers across the counter. You got a distance, and you're doing something different. Now you have to interact socially. And so, I found my way, yes, to the pub. I found my way to the pub, and the pub was one place where at least the barman would talk to me, and I found that I was surrounded by people, and you get lost in that safe, quote-unquote, safe environment. But one evening, within a few days, a group of people took over a corner of the pub. And this group of people were rock musicians. So they had the electric guitar, the drums, the whole thing. And this was a pub at Imperial College in the basement, and I was sitting there drinking my beer, and listening to this group. And what struck me, as they were singing, as they were talking, as they were sharing, as there were people coming, giving their story, they started talking about this Jesus. Now, you can imagine me listening to these people talking about this Jesus and thinking to myself, interesting, they're referring to a man from Galilee. There was a song by Bob Dylan called Put Your Hands in the Hands of the Man from Galilee. And I said, Galilee is in the Middle East, ain't in the city of London. This Jesus I know comes from the city of London. I don't agree with these people. And so they gave a little form that I had they asked you to fill out at the end of the evening. So I filled the form out. I want to discuss more. I canceled the word discuss. I said, I want to argue. Come and see me. So I was all set for an argument. And boy, did I argue. They came at me. This one man came, 6'4", blue-eyed, blonde, lovely, a chap who was an economist in the City of London, graduate and all that, but spent time, and that really touched me. He was prepared to take time out to come and argue with me about Jesus. And we started arguing. And I must confess, coming from a Hindu faith, a Sikh upbringing, an Islamic education, he didn't stand a chance. It took only a few weeks, and he left me. But he did the following. He gave me a book, the New Testament. He said, Ram, I'm leaving this with you. I can't argue anymore with you. You read it, and you be careful to do everything that's in this book. And I said, yeah, yeah. And he went on his way. And there I was alone again. So I started reading this book. Until then, I'd skimmed through it. And of course, starting to read it, I must confess, it was very confusing. You know, you get the New Testament. You've never come across a book like this before. I start on the first book. I then go to the second book, and I said, why is everything repeating again? And then I went to the third book, and I said, oh, I'm going to give up on this. This is just a repetition, padding. What is this? But luckily for me, there was a Christian who was also on my course, and I knew he was a Christian because he had the Bible, and he said to me, he went to Bible studies, and I said, look, this book I'm trying to read, I really can't understand why it repeats itself. And this man said to me, read it. And he said, Ram, I see your problem. He said, would you like to go to Corinthians? I said, where's that? He said, okay, fast forward a few pages. And then I fast forwarded and I came to Corinthians. Friends, I can tell you, I had never read that in my life. But when I read the book of Corinthians, you know, coming as a refugee to London and coming as someone who's experiencing London for the first time, you begin to find out about the places that really are not the best places to go to. One of them at that time was Soho. And I went there. And I saw life in Soho. And you know, as I read the book of Corinthians, I said, this could have been Paul's letter to the Sohoians. It really could. I mean, the depravity it talks about. This book didn't mince its words. It was real. It was relevant, it was current, it was absolutely amazing. And I just couldn't put it down. But then, of course, how do I know it's true? It's irrelevant. How do I know it's true? So I did the usual. I went to the British Library, checked things out, and I began to see the historicity of this whole, of the evidence around the life and birth and death and all the issues around Jesus. It really challenged me as a physicist to begin to see and know and learn things that made me rethink what I believed in and why I believed in what I believed in. But of course, my biggest and deepest issue was to do with the problem of karma. Now, karma, if I can explain to you, is what you sow, you reap. You sow good, you'll reap good. You sow bad, you'll reap bad. Now, I was sitting in that pub, and as I did a quick calculation of the good and bad, I said, I'm bankrupt. Spiritually, I'm bankrupt. Spiritually, I know the bad I've done. Look, I'm a businessman. And I just know, just on that equation alone, and in terms of social life, in terms of living as a human being, I was spiritually, morally bankrupt. What hope is there for moral bankruptcy? What hope is there for spiritual bankruptcy? And there were these people. And I was remembering what they were saying, the songs they were singing, and then reading the Bible. And of course, Jesus talked about sin. The Bible talked about sin. But I, in my physics mind, said, you know, you would learn to live in equations if X equals Y. I said, if sin equals karma, then this deal that is being offered to me sounds like a very good deal indeed. Because Jesus is saying, I've paid the lot. You don't have to do anything. And I thought, goodness, that's an exciting equation. Let me see if that works. And so with great struggle, with amazing, I suppose, and I say this because as a business person and as a self-made person, pride is something in great currency for people like me. It took a lot of humility just to say, all right, I'm prepared to surrender and to give a chance to this equation that says, if Jesus takes charge and I get on my knees and ask him to take charge of my life, let's see what happens. I don't know what the next day would bring. Now, of course, you know, people say, you know, there's this sort of fairy tale ending, isn't there? And they lived happily ever after. Well, don't you believe it? My problems began the next day. Big problems. I'll give you just a glimpse of a few problems that occurred. Firstly, which church do I go to? I saw all these Christians with Bibles going into churches. So the man who left me with the Bible, I said, all right, let me take my address book. I took pieces of paper, and I started taking the addresses of all the local churches in South Kensington. And then I came back to my room, and I couldn't find any of those addresses in the Bible. There were none in the Bible. So I said, where do I go? So I said, right, church is out for a start. I'm not going to any church because there are none of them in the Bible. And then came the next question. What had I become? Had I become a Protestant or a Catholic? I'd become a follower of Christ. I knew I was a disciple of Jesus. I knew that the Jesus that Steve talks about so really is the same Jesus all those 35 years ago, however 1972 takes you back to. What had I become? And I tell you how that problem got resolved many years later on, because I still wasn't sure what I was. But I was a follower of Jesus, and I did start going to church. Sunita, we were expecting our first child. We'd moved on to Geneva by now in Switzerland. The corner shop business had been put behind me. I'd gone to the city of London. I'd got a job in the bank. I left that. I joined Sunita's uncle, who was starting a trading business. I then found myself in charge of a business with 7,000 people in 15 countries, turning over $200 million. And here we were in Geneva expecting our first child. And the day the baby was born, guess what happens with absolute Swiss efficiency? Within hours, the registrar of births, you don't have to go to the registrar of births, they come to you. And so she, and they set up shop in the basement in the hospital, so you go, you take your turn. And so she started filling the form out. Nom, prenom, Gidumal, Ram, all that. And then she said, religion. I said, chrétien, Christian. She looked at me, she said, ça n'existe pas. She said, it doesn't exist. I said, what do you mean it doesn't exist? I'm a Christian. She said, ou protestant, ou catholique. I said, oh dear. You know, that's the dreaded PC question. I thought, now what do I do? So I said, I refuse to put either category for myself because I really hadn't grappled with that. So I phoned up my pastor. I said, at the local church, the Evangelical Baptist Church of Geneva. I said, Derek, I need some urgent counseling. I want to know an answer to a very important question. So I went to see Derek late at night, about 8, 9. Poor man came out just for me. And then he started explaining things to me. He said, Ram, have you heard of King Henry VIII? I said, is he in the Bible? He said, no. I said, then why are you telling me about King Henry VIII? And so I struggled with this issue and again argued with the poor man until it came to the point where I said, all right, I think I know what I got to fill out in the form the next day. So I took the answer in my pocket and the next day went very gingerly, very coyly to the registrar. And as I approached her, she actually came towards me. She said, Monsieur Guidumal, voilà le certificat. Here's your certificate. I said, what have you put in that box? So we opened up this, box, the envelope, and looked at the box, and she said, restez calm. She said, see, we've created a special box for you, Christian, and we've changed our computer program. There you are. Now, I must confess, when I was invited to address the United Prayer Breakfast in Ireland, when we had both South and North Protestants and Catholics together, somebody from the back of the audience said, can we have the program here, please? I said, at a price, you can, but never mind. No, I joke. But you know, so many of these labels put barriers in terms of the simplicity of the message that is there of what Jesus says. You know, Steve articulated it so beautifully. And I can just say to you that is the heart, the guts, the essence of that good news or the gospel or whatever one refers to it as. That news that liberates, that certainly influenced me all those years ago and got me to a point where I've never turned back, never. It's been just that step in that long journey that really made a big impact and difference. Of course, one bit I didn't share with you was about the church. I said very quickly, I went to church. How did I go to church, having said I wouldn't go to church? a friend, to cut a long story short, invited me to come to church once, and I thought, okay, I'll go. I said, I'll come in the evening. And this was my first experience ever in a church. And this was, I was invited to St. Paul's Onslow Square, where all the students went. And I said, I'll come at night so others wouldn't see me, because I was afraid. This persecution, what will the other Asians think? You know, this man's now become a Christian. What's it all about? So I went at night. I went into this church for the first time, and I looked for the shoe rack. Because, you know, as one does, you know. And they said to me, no shoe rack, Ram. Keep your shoes on. I said, my socks are clean. He said, no, you keep your shoes on. I said, all right. So I went on with him. And he was getting quite concerned, this guy who was inviting me at this point. And then I found a beautiful carpeted area. And I said, please, can I sit on the floor there? And he said, no, you sit on the pews, on these wooden benches. I said, oh, my goodness, that's painful. How can I worship sitting above the floor on benches? And then the organ blasted out. I said, who died? He said, nobody. This is where we are. And it was so difficult. You know, the culture of one, from one culture to another culture, when you start looking at these issues, it becomes so challenging. But you know, when the vicar spoke, his name is Raymond Turvey, I can tell you something. As he spoke and explained biblical truth, he did it in a way that was so simple, so powerful. He took one verse of scripture that may be familiar to some of you, where he said, you're the salt of the earth. He spent 30 minutes talking about salt, and he had me riveted and gripped. And there was my prejudice. You know, I look back at the time those musicians were singing, and I look back at my prejudice and the scales in my eyes that I thank God I was allowing to fall bit by bit, because it took a will also on my part to say, am I prepared to overcome my prejudice? You know, I don't know what prejudices some of you or any of you may have about when you hear the word Jesus. You know, some people get angry. I mean, Steve himself shared very honestly how angry he got when he saw that word. You know, there are members in my extended family who even today get very angry. We all of us have different prejudices, but I can tell you, as I took that step, as I went forward, it really did make that big, huge difference. And of course, talking of prejudices and talking about cross-cultural experiences, I was reminded by John Drake when we met. We met a few years ago in the Queen Elizabeth II Conference Center in Westminster. And I shared this story then. You know, when I was running the business, one of the acquisitions that we had, and these acquisitions, when you're running a big business with thousands of people, just appear as paperwork, you know, on your computer screen. And so this acquisition appeared, 200 people working in Scotland. And so we said, all right, we'll send our man from London, Colin, to go and take charge of the seafoods factories. And we were doing smoked salmon, crabs, scampi, scallops, all the sort of really good specialty seafoods. And then, as in any family business, we're having a dinner one Sunday, and this is the man's going on Monday or the following week, and we were discussing it, and then the three of us said, hey, wouldn't it be exciting to build a global seafoods business? And he said, yeah, how much would it take? £5 million. Who would go and do it? And all the eyes turned at Ram. So I said, yeah, and this is Sunita, me in Geneva with three young children. I said, would you go to Scotland and take direct charge? We'll give you the £5 million underwriting. You go and build a global seafoods empire. I said, fine, it's a family business, you do it. So I called up Scotland, London. I said to the chap in London, look, you're not going to Scotland. I'm taking the place, me and my wife, children, we're going to go to Scotland. So we switch flights, we arrive in Heathrow, we go off to Aberdeen, we arrive in Aberdeen. And there, waiting for us in Aberdeen, is this very, very glum-looking man. You can tell a glum face across any culture, honestly. And he had this placard, Highland Seafood. So I said, I went up to him. I said, you know, it's Mr. Gidumal. You're expecting Colin, but I've come to take direct charge and take me to the hotel near the factory, and we're going to move. You know, he looked glum, but within seconds, minutes, it's like a load lifted off his head, and he just shook hands, and he was effusive and positive, and I thought, it's a bit of a jump here. Took me to the factory. 200 people slicing smoked salmon, all assembled now together to meet the new managing director, the new chief. You could hear a pin drop. They were absolutely miserable. They really looked like the world's coming to an end, and I said, all right. So I said, look, he then introduced me. Within minutes, a load got lifted off the air. They were all absolutely relieved. Oh, right. And it all changed. And I couldn't understand the sudden shift. And about 3 months later, when I got to know these guys really well, I said to Foster, when I came 3 months ago, everybody looked so glum and miserable and unhappy. And then they saw me and they were all looking so excited and positive. He said, Ram, they were expecting an Englishman. honestly, I didn't have a clue. I couldn't understand those placards. There were huge billboards that said, we support Scotland and every team that plays England. And now I understood what they meant. But you know, the reason I share that story is because obviously there are differences, so many differences we are not aware of. There are so many prejudices we are not aware of. And it cuts both ways. You know, when it comes to the Jesus of the Bible, when it comes to Jesus of Nazareth, when it comes to faith and belief in a person who has had such a significant influence on the globe, the prejudices of some people obviously put them off. But my urge and my plea, as was Steve's earlier on, and as in those beautiful words we had sung to us, is think again about those prejudices. Because, you know, Britain as a society, and this point I really do want to make. I will not make a political point. How am I doing for time? I'm okay. I do want to make this point because it is in fact connected with this whole issue of the Jesus of the Bible and matters Christian. Some of you, although this isn't a political event and I will not make any party political point, I assure the organizers and I assure anyone else here from any political sphere, I will not make party political points. But I do want to make a point about the role of Jesus in terms of the public square and our British society. And I say our British society because in my adopted country, I know the role that that has had in terms of the underpinnings and foundations of this nation. I was asked in 1999 by a group of young people to run for mayor and in London. And what was interesting is, you know, they were running on a Christian Democrat ticket, okay? But that's that was by the by. What was interesting is I was an independent candidate and all our policies were effectively, unashamedly drawn. We said, you know, these have come from Christian principles and we are drawing these principles into manifestos and into the public square. The New Statesman did a web poll, a blind fantasy mayor this was called, okay? So, and I had the privilege of featuring on it. They had the three main parties, they had Ken Livingstone, they had the Greens, and they had yours truly. And what was and I was only tipped off about this from a political correspondent of the Times who called me to alert me that such a poll was happening. And he said, visit the website, Ram. You'll be getting some good news if you visit it. I said, oh, all right. When you go on the website, it asks you, who would you vote for? 56 for the top candidate, Ken. 3.5% for Mr. Gidomal. They were then asked, what do you want from whoever becomes the mayor? When they answered that question, and there were 15 questions to do with housing and crime and a whole range of issues, when they answered those 15 questions, the candidate who came out on top was Ram Gidomal. Now, I say that because the party was the Christian People's Alliance, and the word Christian, what that really said to me was that people out there actually value matters Christian. Matters to do with Christian underpinnings in society are important, but they don't know it. And we forget about it so easily. We take it for granted. You know, I come from a background that is non-Christian. To me, I see this with different eyes. I see this perhaps with a fresh set of eyes. I don't know. Maybe there are others who've got tired, who've taken it for granted and think, well, does it really matter? Friends, it really does. You know, whether or not, whatever your view about Jesus, and I say this really seriously, whatever your view about Jesus, can I say to you that when it comes to matters Christian, they affect every one of you. They really do. You know, there is that Niemöller who made this very profound statement when he said, they came for the Jews and I didn't object because I wasn't a Jew. They came for the trade unionists and I didn't object because I wasn't a trade union, a Labour Party member. They came for, and a whole list of people he mentions. And then he says, and then they came for me. And there was no one left to object. What I say is this, that this issue is so important, but I want to take it away even from the public square to the person, to individuals here this evening. And I will challenge you, if you have ever considered this issue, if this is something that you have skirted with or toyed with, please think carefully about this Jesus, because that can make all the difference. That can make every difference in the life of the individual, and therefore of the family, and therefore of society, and therefore of the nation. It is that simple and that profound. It is an important step. And you may say, what will one make difference? I'm always challenged by the story of this young kid. He's on a beach. And as the tide was coming in, shellfish were coming in. And when they came in, and the tide went out, and the sun shone, they died. So this kid walked along the beach, picked up these little shellfish, and kept throwing them back into the sea. An old man comes by, and he looks at this kid throwing back this shellfish into the sea, and he says, "You're being ridiculous, young man. For every one you throw, there's another 100 that come and get lost on the beach. You're wasting your time." He picked one up, and he threw it into the sea, and he said, "It makes all the difference to that one." So the point is, every single one makes that difference. And I would urge you, and I would echo what Steve said earlier, that the whole message about the life and story and a truth about this Jesus that we've heard about and that we've come across in many different ways is something that is of profound importance and significance to every individual. And I would urge you to think about your relationship with that Jesus. I'll stop there and pause and hand over to the chair of the event. Thank you.